Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, guys, Monday afternoon. Welcome to the show, Believe You Me podcast. Myself, Michael, the Count Bisping, and Louis, the Puerto Rican rattlesnake,
Jay Gomez. Jay, don't forget the J. You got to put the J in there as well. No, maybe it has to be the Puerto Rican rattlesnake, Louis J. Gomez.
Okay, all right, whatever. Welcome to the show. How is everybody? Hope you're well. We got Brian in Harrington, and we don't have anybody joining us whatsoever later on. We say that sometimes. We've got such and such joining us. This time we don't. How was your weekend, Lewis?
My weekend was pretty good. I've been, you know, we talked last time. I'm on full-time dad duty this week, so I'm a little bit on edge at all times. I'm a little bit like, I'm trying to, you know, I try to be a good dad and try to not be angry and tense in front of my son. So I just walk around sort of on edge, wanting to let it out. And every time he leaves the room, I just scream into the air. But
me,
I have to say, happy birthday to you.
So annoying.
Happy birthday to you.
Don't do it. We did this last year. You can't do the same bit every year.
Hey, Mr. President.
Yeah. All right. You sung that last year. Go back to Brian with the cake, though. And last year we did have fun at this, that you all get cake on my... You know, there's a thing called UPS, the U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, many, many courier services around. If you really cared, you'd ship me a piece of cake as well.
I feel like we probably wouldn't send it UPS. I just order it from a local cake shop, get it on some Uber Eats, put your address in. We just don't care. We're bad friends.
Whichever way you want to do it, whichever way. I mean, if you know a better, more foolproof way, then you could have done it. But you're all eating cake. You're getting fat, Lewis. You know, I'm just saying, maybe you don't want to be having that cake.
Just so you know, I have cake. I'm not even going to eat it. I'm going to throw it away.
Whoa, you have cake and you're not even going to eat it. Well, I didn't have cake. I didn't have cake at all.
Really?
No. My wife knows I don't like cake. I did get homemade cookies, though.
You got something sweet for your birthday. You don't like cake? That is the most grumpy human being thing in the world. I've never met a person who says, I don't like cake.
I don't mind it. It's not like, birthday cake. Awesome. No, give me some nice chocolate chip cookies. My wife, I'm just going to say this right now, she makes the best chocolate chip cookies in the world. Simple as that. So, yeah, she had a couple of nice little gifts and a little bag of homemade cookies. There you go. Nice and happy.
Very nice. If you had to eat cake, what would be your favorite cake?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not really an aficionado. But red velvet. There you go.
I do like a bit of chocolate cake. Red velvet is like the one cake. If somebody says they like red velvet cake, you're like, all right, this person dropped out of the fifth grade.
Yeah, well, I don't know every type of cake known to man, okay? I don't. Shoot me for it. Sue me for it. I don't care. Listen, people don't tune this podcast because of Michael and his amazing breakdowns of cakes. They don't want that. I don't know what goes into a cake, but I tell you what, when I see my wife make cookies and I see how much fucking sugar actually goes into them, it's insane.
You know what I found? I found a sugar-free cheesecake. There's a place called Muscle Makers Grill, which is like a really awesome health food spot. And it's very dudely, you know, it looks like a gym. It's all like metal and fucking, it's got like grates everywhere and it's just healthy food for like dudes. And they have a sugar-free cheesecake and it is phenomenal.
You're not going to ask me what I got for my birthday, Lewis?
I was going to, that was actually my next question. Can you get out of my head?
No. It's okay. It's okay. You see this fine gentleman I have on my chest here?
I do.
You know who that is?
Is it your father?
No, it's not my father. Bloody hell.
Who is it?
It's not my father. I'm just looking. No, no, no. That is Harry Greb. Harry Greb. Very, very famous boxer, but in the early 1900s, like 1920, something like that. He had something like 270-odd fights and won most of them, a lot of them by knockouts. And so my wife got me this T-shirt. She got me a book about his life, which is called Live Fast and Die Young. I'm like, what are you trying to tell me here, Rebecca? What the fuck? But the relevance of it is that I only recently came across Harry Greb, and he was a guy that won the world title with one eye and hid it from everybody and only told his wife and his close friends and things like that. So I was like, oh shit. So I started looking into this guy, and then my wife surprised me with a book about him and a T-shirt and a fishing rod of all things. So I got my own little fishing set now. Do you know what I mean? So hopefully one day I will catch a fish.
I love it. We've gone fishing together. Michael Bisping, and I will say this, and with all due respect, you know, you're the former world champion. You won the championship with one eye. It's incredible. You cannot catch a fish with one eye. You need both your eyes to catch a fish.
No, no, no. Well, I did just as good as you did. You see, Mr. fucking Judgment. My God, you just sat there littering the countryside.
I know. I just threw Cheetos in the lake.
I caught a crab last time. I went down to Huntington Beach Pier. I caught a crab. But
I caught crabs in college.
But yet to catch a fish. There's a lake by my house. See, now I've got a fishing rod. We don't have to go rent the stuff. We just anytime you want freedom. Anytime the notion takes me. But I'm like, pretty boring gifts, but still, whatever. They're very, very thoughtful gifts. Rebecca wrote a little message in the book. A nice little fishing rod. I'm joking. Only thing I asked for, I said, get me a new pair of trainers. Didn't get the shoes. Didn't get them.
I think this is 3 years in a row you've asked for trainers.
Because it's every time I'm like, just get me a pair of shoes. You know what I mean? I'm easy. She says, what do you want? Oh, buy me a pair of trainers and buy me a T-shirt. I'm good. A T-shirt and a pair of trainers, I'm happy. But to be honest, these are better gifts. Like the book I can keep forever. And
which sneakers did you want?
I don't know. Just whatever. Just whatever. You know what I mean?
Maybe daddy will get you a pair of trainers.
No, maybe he will. Maybe he won't. You know, but still, 42 goddamn years old. It's crazy. I was driving home from Vegas Saturday night after the fight. So I was like, man. Oh, because I was listening to a song, Thin Lizzy. The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town. You know the one?
Just, I mean, that's not how it goes, but I know the song you're talking about.
I was just about to say, I totally butchered it. I can't sing. Sue me. I can't do everything, Lewis. Yeah. But I was driving back and I was listening. It's a good song. And I'm listening to it, you know, and I'm tapping my feet and bopping my head on the 4-hour drive by myself. I was there, the boys are back in town. And I just like remembered when I was a kid and I would walk into the pub with the boys and everything. And then that got me thinking on the eve of my 42nd birthday, the boy is long fucking gone and the boys are never coming back in town. And I was thinking, man, wouldn't it be awesome to be 21 fucking years old again? Knowing what you know now, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all the time, but it's like, you know, if you could do it all over again, would you? Would you go back? If you can go back to 21 years old, you snap your fingers right now, you go back to 21 years old, you fix all those mistakes, you would do it all over again.
Yes. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the way things worked out, but I know I could have done a better job. Definitely. Everything. If you can go back and redo it, why the hell wouldn't you want to do it? But as they say, hold on, all the world is a stage. What is it? What's that saying? Oh my God. There's no reruns or whatever. I forget it. It's a Shakespeare quote. I'll surprise you as well. Not too up on my Shakespeare.
How old were you when you had your kids? How old were you when you had Callum?
22. Rebecca was pregnant at 19. That went down well when we had to tell her mum and dad. Oh, but yeah, God. I think I was 22 and Rebecca was 19 or 20.
That's crazy. That's such a, it's so young. I mean, back then it wasn't that crazy, or it wasn't that you know, and often that people got pregnant and had kids at that age. But I think about now, like today, that is absolutely wild. I didn't grow up until I was maybe 30. That's when I started to mature, like just a little bit.
Yeah, Callum's 19, and we often say, because he's 20 in a couple of months, and we often say, wow, when we were Callum's age, certainly Rebecca, when Callum's a little bit older, we had children. And Callum's still a child himself. Of course, you know, we're his parents, so we look at him like that. And the reality is he's a young man, but still in our minds and in reality, he's still a baby, still a young man, still finding his way in the world. And yeah, we had kids. But honestly, I wouldn't change that aspect of things because everything worked out perfectly. That's, you know, and we're looking forward to it. I was thinking about this because I know people that are my age that are just having kids now. You know, and yeah, they had a wild time when they were young and they had a great time. But when they're still fucking changing diapers, nappies, or doing the drop-offs or the homeschooling or whatever, me and Rebecca, we're going to be flying around the world, no kids, drama-free, you know, sitting on a beach, sipping Mai Tais in the Maldives. So fuck you all.
Yeah. I look, my chick now that I'm dating, she told me she wants kids. And I'm like, I don't know if I could do it all over again. It's so much.
Steady on. I've only been with you 2 minutes. What the fuck? what's your name again?
I'll be 39 in 1 month. 1 month from today. Yeah. I'm 39, which is, that's, I'm almost 40. It's crazy. When I still think of like my friend's parents right now, I think of them as being like 45. I can't get it out of my head because, you know, when you see your friends from high school, that's how old, you know, everyone's parents were. They were in their 40s. And I can never sort of wrap my mind around that all of my friends' parents are now like in their 60s or 70s and we're all growing up. And I like getting older, but, you know, dude, being younger, it was such a struggle. And it was for you too. I know we just had like very different struggles, but it was so difficult to sort of get where I'm at now. And it, like I said, it wasn't until I was maybe in my 30s, early 30s, till I started really seeing some success. So it was just a whole bunch of struggle up until that point. I don't know that I would do it again. I don't know if I could do it again.
Well, it's part of the fun in trying, but still, yeah. There you go. All right. Well, I'm 42 and I got no time to waste, Lewis. I, you know, that's my new thing now. 42, man. I can't be wasting time. So let's get the fuck into these notes and talk about, well, that was a rather disappointing main event at the weekend. Let's be honest, right? It was highly hyped. And it wasn't the best fight. It was a technical performance from Ciryl Gane. But yeah, the reality is it was not the most exciting fight, you know. But go ahead, Lewis.
Look, people were hating on it. It was like they were talking about it like it was Lewis Ngannou. It wasn't that bad.
It was not that bad.
Yeah, the expectation for, I think, these big heavyweights, especially these guys, are both very, very, very well accredited kickboxers. You know, it was like, we're going to see a knockout. We're going to see explosiveness. We're going to see these guys knock each other's heads off. There's no way this fight's going five rounds. Well, sure enough, you know, look, you can't really blame Ciryl Gane. He was fighting a damn near perfect fight. I mean, if you're doing what's extremely effective, staying safe, I think you even made that point at one point during the broadcast. It's like longevity is important, right? And people are only going to remember whether you won or lost. And if you're going up against a guy who can knock your head off, well, and you don't need to put yourself at risk. You can get in and get out because he was really impressive. Ciryl Gane's athleticism, he was moving around like he was a middleweight. You know, we talked last week about, what's his name? Oh my God. English guy was just on the show.
Darren Till, Leon Edwards.
No, heavyweight.
Oh, Tom Aspinall.
Yeah, we were talking about Aspinall. Very similar with Ciryl Gane, just moves around, you know, very, very fast, very athletic, very explosive, but fought somewhat safe, never really put himself in danger. I appreciate it as a fan of mixed martial arts and as a fan of the fight game. I appreciated watching what he did. It was a little, I think Rozenstruik was sort of the one that was more frustrating because he wasn't really doing anything to progress in the fight, not really throwing more than one or two punches at a time. And, you know, Ciryl, he said, fuck it, I'm just going to go coast to this, you know, unanimous decision. And it was, I think it was 50-45. It wasn't as bad as people were saying, but definitely not the fight that you would show somebody that hasn't seen mixed martial arts before.
Yeah, you want to try commentating a fight like that because it's our job to make it exciting, right? And it is kind of difficult. But, yeah, listen, it wasn't a classic. But it wasn't certainly the worst fight. It wasn't an Ngannou, as you said, versus Lewis. And to be honest, I like Biggie Boy Jairzinho. I mean, I don't know him well, but the interactions that I have and when we speak to him, when we do the meetings, seems like a really, really nice guy. And he's a hell of a fighter, right? He's knocked out a lot of people and he's not here by accident. He's here because he deserves it and he's earned this spot. So, you know, I'll be as respectful as I can, but also at the same point, you've got to be honest. And the reality is that he never pulled the trigger. And I understand that, you know, when you're in there and the guy's big and you know the consequences and one shot can change everything and all the rest of it, it's hard and it takes a lot of courage. But the reality is that is why we get paid. And that's why they chose to be in the main event. And that's why there's a healthy, handsome fight purse at the end of it, because that is our job. You know what I mean? Yes, yeah. The risk is there. The risk is there for all of us, but you got to put yourself in that. That is, but I said about Ciryl Gane, because Ciryl Gane could have done more as well, but he was coasting to a victory. He was fully in control of that fight. What he did, he controlled the range perfectly. He had the footwork to get in and out, land a fast jab. And for such a big guy, his jab was absolute fucking lightning. But he'd get in, he'd land a jab, he'd get out of the way. He'd land a few kicks, he'd get out of the way. And you can't blame him for doing that. Why would you stand in the pocket against a massive guy like Jorginho that has knockout power if you don't need to? Now, there is another side to it, because I remember I saw a quote from Dana. Dana spoke to some of the journalists. It might have been Damon Martin. Shout out Damon Martin, saying, you know, look at what Ngannou did to Rozenstruik. And here's Cyril Garn. He's got all the future ahead of him and he never really pulled the trigger. I do understand Dana's point as well. And certainly as the promoter, you know what I mean? That's got to piss you off a little bit. As I said, they're getting paid handsomely. I'm not paying those paychecks. It's coming out of fucking the UFC and Dana's pocket. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you can understand the frustration a little bit. And yeah, Cyril, this is what I said. I mean, do you want to fight for the world championship? Do you want to show the world that you're one of the best? You know, Stipe Miocic's out there. He's fighting Ngannou. And John Jones is waiting in the wings, sure enough. And he did tweet Saturday night, "Daddy's coming home soon," which is a pretty funny tweet. But he could have gone out there and really put a stamp of approval on that fight. And like, you know, we would have been talking about it for very different reasons. Now, he looks sensational. He does look, he's incredibly explosive and gifted and athletically gifted. And he has excellent striking and he has good submissions, you know. And I thought, I can't blame him. And he passed the test, 50-45. Rozenstruik, he said, as I read today, he was very, very disappointed in himself as well. And rightly so. And listen, I've been there sometimes. I've never done that in a fight, but you know, sometimes you are a little more hesitant. And I get it. Remember, he's only one fight removed from getting knocked out against Francis Ngannou himself. So maybe there's still a little bit of, you know, he's a little gun shy from that, maybe a little residue left over from that fight. But, you know, the reality is next time, see, this is the thing. Garn won the fight. And people might say, well, what's the problem? He won the fight. What more do you want? Yeah, he wants the fight. But there's also an entertainment factor. This is sport / entertainment. And people will say, well, fuck the entertainment factor. In sport-wise, this is who won the fight, right? By the rules, he won that 50-45. But that fight isn't going to sell out arenas. That fight isn't going to have clamoring people to see him again. So ultimately what it does, it affects your ability in the sport, because even though you're winning the fight, granted, if the idea for Cyril Garn to be involved with this sport is to make money, and the two go hand in hand, you've got to be exciting if you want to make money. If you don't want to make money and just be the best, great, but that could be a little bit boring and you're not going to get the big paydays what you'd like to.
And we've seen people that have fought with, you know, I don't want to say boring because it's a little bit disparaging, because it's not boring. Like, you look at somebody like George St. Pierre. I think that was a criticism of George, that he fought very safe. He would always take his opponent out of his comfort zone, sort of fight his fight. And a lot of the time it was take him down, ground and pound, but it was sort of just dominating position. On the striking side, I think I would almost compare it to a Lyoto Machida. You remember Machida was coming in fighting very, very safe.
Yeah.
He didn't really need to, you know, explode and do anything crazy. When he was sort of coming up, I think that was a criticism of Machida. I think when you're undefeated, if you can stay undefeated and win a championship, you know, that is a long road to becoming a superstar. You just have to fight perfect. If Cyril Garn can stay undefeated, beat everybody in his way, become the world champion, and then he has that fight style where he's like, people can't hit him, he's in and out. I think that there's definitely a path to becoming a superstar and a multimillionaire, but it's a much longer path than getting in there and biting down on your mouthpiece and just giving people a real show, because his style is the style that can give people a real show. He can knock people out. He's good looking. He's Jack fucking Diesel. You know, he's definitely got a lot of these factors and a lot of these variables that could turn him into a massive, massive star. He just didn't really let it go. But maybe in this stage where he's still coming up, you know, he's still, you know, an upcomer, he's a new name to the UFC, maybe it's a smarter thing to get a few of those wins, be undefeated, and start being known as the dude that can't be beat. There's two different trains of thought there.
Yeah, but the problem is for him now as well is that he just beat Rozenstruik, and I think Rozenstruik or Strike, whichever fucking one it is, Jorginho we'll call him, I think he was ranked number 4, you know, and then he just beat him. So he's still, I mean, this is the thing as well for Cyril. He's 8-0 now, I think. Or maybe that was his ninth fight, whatever it is. Yeah, so 9-0 now. He's still a baby. A lot of people aren't even thinking about the UFC. It took me, I was 10-0 when I got on The Ultimate Fighter. You know, so he got to the UFC about 6-0 or something like that, which is crazy. And now he's got no choice but to be taking on the best guys. I mean, because after that, unfortunately, he's probably going to be, you know, I mean, he's not ready for a Stipe Miocic, and I don't think he'd probably want that fight anyway. You know, he's got to work on his wrestling. Of course, he's got great striking. and he's got some submissions. We saw a head and arm choke. We've seen a heel hug. But the wrestling is where he's going to struggle. I mean, if Daniel Cormier was around, that'd be a bad matchup. Stipe Miocic, of course, beat Ngannou and out-wrestled him as well. So the problem for him now is that he's in the deep end of the heavyweight division. You know, so he's going to have to think very, very carefully about his next matchup. And Jorginho, he's back to the drawing board. I mean, it's a shame for him because, yeah, he came in, great momentum, all knockouts, doing fantastic, knocks out Overeem, then gets smoked in 20 seconds by Ngannou. But that's okay. He comes back, rebuilds, beats Junior Dos Santos, knockout second round. Oh, he's back. But then he comes out again with this fight and doesn't perform and doesn't really show up, you know. And he knows that. He knows that. I mean, that might seem like a harsh assessment, but it's true. He didn't pull the trigger. What he had to do, because when he did explode, when he did go for it, there was one or two occasions where he exploded. There was one time, I think Cyril threw a kick and he kind of caught it and he rushed forward with like 3-4 hooks. And when he was doing that, he looked super fucking dangerous. And it was like, whoa. But he just needed more of that.
That was the moment where his corner, I guess his coach smacked the apron and it made that big sound, because you had mentioned it during the broadcast. His corner must have been really frustrated, where they were like, go for it. That's what you need to do, is you need to get this guy on his heels and start, you know, pushing the pace. Because when he did that, Cyril didn't look like he wanted to engage either with some sort of firefight. So I think you were right, and you pointed that out while it was happening. And
It's smart on Cyril's part. Why would you want to do that? This guy's bricks in his hands, you know. Yeah, so do I, but Jorginho probably hits harder. So why would you do that? You never want to fight somebody you don't want to fight them at their game. You don't want to say, all right, what's the best style of fighting for him? Standing in the pocket and trading. Okay, fuck it, let's do that. No, you do the opposite of it. So Cyril had the correct game plan, but I would have liked to have seen more tempo. He could have just been busier. There was a little, there was a lot of moments where they were standing there in between each other and not a lot happening. Cyril could have stuck to the game plan, but just had more of a sense of urgency, broke him down a little bit more. And if he had done that, maybe rounds 3-4, he could have got a finish, because, you know, the calf kicks and all the rest of it and the punches, and it starts building up. It's like a video game. You know, your energy bar is going down and he's in round 4 and Jorginho's swinging like a fucking out of breath Godzilla. You know, he's like, fuck it, let's go in for the kill. You know, he could have done that, but he didn't, but he got the win. So, you know, that's what matters at the end of the day.
Well, now I want to see Tom Aspinall versus Cyril Gane. Is that not the fight to make? Is there not a better matchup right now?
It's crazy, because the heavyweight division right now has really got some good new contenders. We were talking, what's his name? Chris Dawkus is another guy. He's on fire right now. You got Tom Aspinall. There's a few. I mean, obviously we got Cyril Gane as well. Then you got all the old school guys. You know, you got your Stipe as the champion, Overeem, Volkov, all those people. But that is a dark horse. Well, the three young talent, it's Dawkus, it's Aspinall, and it's Cyril Gane. And the problem is, because you're right, either one of them against each other would be awesome. And it's kind of a logical step for all of them to fight each other. But if I'm the UFC, if it was my promotion, I'm trying to keep them away from each other. You know what I mean? Because why do you want to burn them both out? Why do you want to take two really solid prospects like Aspinall and Dawkus, have them fight each other, and then one of them has got a fucking loss on the record? You know what I mean? Or one of them gets injured, or one of them gets knocked out, or one of them, you know, falls from grace in terms of the public perception, and you lose that star power ability. If I was the UFC, I'd match both of them up with other contenders, other people that have been around for a while, and let them, you know, when they're nearing the championship, maybe match them up then.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. I just think in terms of stylistically, I just want to see the fight. It seems like an awesome matchup. Aspinall brings it. He's going to bring the heat. I don't think that Cyril Gane could avoid being in a really exciting fight with Tom Aspinall. So yeah, I'd like to see that fight happen, but I completely get it. They've been doing that. That's why we just saw Andrei Arlovsky versus Tom Aspinall.
Yeah.
That's typically what they do, is they sort of like have the guy, it's almost like the passing of the guard. You see sort of the old school guys going up against these new school guys. But it just seems to make sense timing wise, because we just saw Tom and also Dawkus. Honestly, all three of them can be matched up against each other and it would all make sense.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. You know, it's funny you mentioned Tom Aspinall. I was just doing a quick live with Darren Till before we went on here. He texts me, he says, Mike, come on and do a live with me. I want to confront you about something. Uh-oh. I'm like, I'm about to start my podcast. He's like, I only need 2 minutes of your time. I'm like, all right, screw it. Let's do it. And then I had to sign up to I had to follow his faster car insurance. So he's involved in that world now, apparently. So I had to go to that Instagram page. And then I gets on and he's like, right, Mike, come on. who's the fucking king of England when it comes to MMA, Mike? You know, and I'm like, this is what you've brought me on here for. So, of course, you know, I said me. And you know, he was talking a bit of shit back and forth. But shout out Darren Till. Said he's going to jump on the show again next week and discuss his big fight with Marvin Vettori. So look forward to that.
All right, Mike, we must thank Carol Bikes for supporting today's show. Carol Bike is a really cool company. It's essentially a fitness trainer at home with AI algorithms that determine the optimal personalized resistance for each user. It's a bike. There's a lot of other bikes out there, but this one is really cool because it actually reads what you are putting out, your output, and then it will customize the workout for you and get you in the optimal conditioning zone.
Yeah, that's right. When you buy the bike, first of all, you're going to do 6 introductory rides, and on there, you know, it calibrates, it reads, takes your heart rate and a bunch of other information. So then it caters the resistance to exactly what you need. So the idea is, I think the workouts, I think they're 8 minutes long with 2 intervals in between. And basically it's Carol was designed to replace fitness with artificial intelligence algorithms. Okay, so way above my pay grade, but what you get is a beautiful little bike with a nice little screen, and essentially takes all the guesswork out of it because they've done all the work, they've done all the science behind it, and these workouts are proven in laboratories by, you know, smart people that know about fitness, okay? Yeah. I know about fitness, but I don't have the smart part. I know about certain things, but I don't know fuck all about artificial intelligence. Fortunately, with the Carol Bike, you don't need to. And of course, once you do those 6 introductory rides, there's other ones you can do. As I said last time, I'm doing the 20-minute interval. So you do 12 seconds easy and then 8 seconds blast. Doesn't sound that hard. Do that for 20 minutes, sweating like an absolute maniac, and had an incredible workout.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, one of the hardest things about working out is just getting out to the gym, finding that extra time, the extra half an hour, 45 minutes, hour, sometimes just getting there and back. It will really impede your motivation. This is nice and easy. It's a compact bike. It's right in your home. You can get the workouts done before work, after work, at your own time. It really is incredible. And we have a pretty incredible deal as well. If you go to CarolFitAI, CarolFitAI.com, and use the promo code Mike, you're going to save $100 off your CarolFit bike.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, it's based around just 2 20-second sprints, which are separated by periods of rest. Like I said, 20 seconds may not seem very long, but during this short time frame, Carol will push you to reach and hold your maximum heart rate level, and you will be exhausted. This has shown to be the most efficient way to deplete glycogen and improve your aerobic capacity. And that's why Carol's main exercise lasts just 8 minutes, like I said, and 40 seconds, with just 3 sessions a week, totaling just 26 minutes for 8 weeks. You are guaranteed to see results. And as Lewis said, you go to CarolFitAI.com. Promo code is Mike. CarolFitAI.com. Promo code is Mike. And you'll get $100 off. Okay. I'm trying to think what other fights were on the card, but I want to talk about which one was it? Had the crazy calf kicks. Let me bring up the fight card in front of me a second. You just talk a second while I do that, Lewis.
Yeah, no problem. But yeah, that is another thing. I mean, we're seeing that in almost every fight now. Is these goddamn calf kicks. It was never even a discussion 6 months ago. Munoz Rivera was the one with the calf kicks. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, my phone's on bloody airplane mode. Everyone calling me like crazy. I'm just so popular, Lewis.
Very
right?
popular. See, look, there it is. Steve-O's podcast.
Bing, 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 bing. Oh, yeah, Steve-O's podcast. That was a lot of fun. Let's have a look. Okay.
Count.
He does talk a bit like that, doesn't he?
I know.
Yeah. He's a good guy, though. Results, here we go. Yeah, co-main event, Magomed Ankalaev taking on Nikita Krylov. I thought that was going to be a sick fight, and it was a technical fight. It was highly contested. It was close, but it wasn't the barn burner I expected. Ankalaev, if you've watched him, he's a fucking killer, man. He's an absolute killer, and so is Krylov. But it was a technical fight with a fair bit of wrestling involved, a lot of clinching. So good fight, though. Good technical battle, but wasn't, you know, the jumping out of your seat war that I thought it would be. Before that, Maya Bueno Silva taking on Montana De La Rosa. Again, good fight for Maya Bueno Silva. She won that. Oh, that was a draw. That's right. Oh, she held the fence in the first round. Did you see that?
Yeah, she got a point deduction, right?
She got a point deduction. The referee, whoever the referee was, I forget now, he did not mess around. Straight away, point deduction. But I like that because...
Do you?
Yeah, of course, because Montana was trying to take it down, and this is when they step in and take the point straight away. When the fence grab clearly stops the takedown from being successful. You know, sometimes, like, you might still be on your feet anyway, but you grab the fence, they'll let that one slide. But if you're on your way down, and as you're like, oh, you just grab the fence, and that stops the takedown, that's when they'll do that. And to be fair, if they do that all the time and it's clear definition and the fighter knows if you do that, you are going to lose a point, you know, it will have fence grabs hopefully be a thing of the past, because Bueno Silva should have had a win, should have got a win bonus, but that fence grab cost her big time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of split on it. I mean, look, I think sometimes you need to give them a warning. But I guess if it's truly the difference between somebody winning or losing a round, that one takedown, yeah. How early in the round was it? Do you remember?
I'm not sure. I can't remember. I think it was like towards the end of the first round. I think it was, yeah.
Because at that point, the ref doesn't know if it's going to make the difference whether that person wins or loses a round, right? Because there was no warning, automatic point deduction. So it's not like he made the decision based off of the fact that it changed the outcome of the round. It was, you know, he just
it may have changed the outcome of the round, because Montana De La Rosa, typically the way she fights, she likes to use a wrestling, get her opponent down on the floor. And Bueno Silva, she's a very hard-hitting Thai boxer. You know what I mean? So the game plan is clear. Take her down to the floor. And by grabbing the fence, that stopped her from implementing her game plan. So therefore, it's a clear breach of the rules. Therefore, I have absolutely no choice but to remove on. You know, you got to take a point.
Have you ever grabbed the fence, Bisping?
Fucking right I have. What do I look like? Some fucking non-fence grabbing motherfucker? No, Michael the fence grabber Bisping, as I was known in certain circles. No, wasn't much of a fence grabber, although there's one time when I fought Rashad Evans. I grabbed the fence a few times, and Greg Jackson, who was in the corner, was screaming his head off at Dan Mergliotta. He's grabbing the fence. He's grabbing the fence. And I was on my ass going, shut the fuck up. Arguing back and forth. And then Dan Mergliotta came over and said, hey, Mike, you did grab the fence a few times. You got to be careful with that. I'm like, okay. And then another time I grabbed it and he was like, he's like, don't do it. And I'm like, I fucking like Dan Mergliotta, because I think he caught me 3 or 4 times and didn't take a point. So I'm like, I want Dan in my corner. And then it was, I think after a fight, two fights after that, who was it? What was his name? Not Alan Belcher, whatever. I was fighting someone and I elbowed him. The finishing move was an elbow, and it was definitely in the back of the head. I didn't mean to, but he moved, you know what I mean? But it was the back of the, and it hits him in the back of the head, and that was the end of the fight. And as I did that, he dives in and stops the fight, and I'm like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Is he stopping it to disqualify me? Or, you know what I mean? And then it was only when I had my hand raised, I was like, oh, God. But I'm like, it's Big Dan. Big Dan lets me do whatever the fuck I want. I'm joking, by the way. Big Dan is just a great guy. I'll do a cup of tea, please, babe, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I would love a cup of coffee, remember?
Yes, Lewis would love a cup of coffee. But yeah, there you go. So that fight. And then what else did we have? We had Jimmy Rivera versus Pedro
Munhoz. That was a great fight.
What an amazing fight. Absolutely. Yeah. I take my hat off to both of those people. I mean, Jimmy Rivera, man, he just hits so fucking hard and he took so much damage. I mean, that calf, and this is where we were talking about it. And I made a joke at one point saying, we got to get rid of these calf kicks, because at least every fight card, there's one fight or one fighter that gets absolutely brutalized due to those calf kicks, you know, and they're so bad. And you see some people, they can't stand after 3 or 4 kicks, and then they get kicked again, then they fall on the floor. Jimmy Rivera is just so tough. He just continued fighting through it. But yeah, they are a devastating technique.
So it's the rumor is, and I've seen a couple of things, because people talk about how they can't be a defender. You can't check a calf kick. And then I'm assuming these are some sort of, you know, couch mixed martial artists. They're like, you can too. And in Muay Thai, they teach you how to do it with your foot and this, that, the other. I don't really know. But if you can't defend it, why wouldn't everybody just start using calf kicks? Why wouldn't everybody that kicks just start attacking the calves nonstop?
Well, number one, those little back bench dickheads, right? Did they ever go and live in Thailand for several months and live with the Thais and train? Because I did. And I know this. There was no mention of, oh, calf kick. Now we go to do calf kick. Okay, Michael, sawadee khab. Today we work on calf kick. No calf kick. There's no such fucking thing in the Thai boxing dictionary that I saw. I went out there, I fucking wrestled, I did the Thai clinching, I did the kicks, I did the bags, I did the knees, I did the drills, I did the running, I did the skipping the rope, I did the little blind weirdo giving me a massage in between rounds, okay? I did everything, okay? I did not get the fucking calf kick breakdown, okay? I didn't see it. I'll tell you another reason. So the calf kicks, you can't take much. Because there's just a lot of muscle there and there's not much bone. When you check a general leg kick, you lift up your knee and you hope to block it with the top of the shin or the bottom of the knee. It's a big, thick, solid piece of bone. And when you block the kick, it hurts your opponent's shin bone. So much so that you can even break. And if you Google it, everybody knows. You can find many, many instances where people's legs have completely fucking snapped. That's how hard, how painful checking a leg kick is. That's why they say, if you're fighting a really good kicker, somebody that uses leg kicks, pardon me. As soon as you check them, they won't throw them again. I remember I fought Cyril Diabaty, who was a very, very well-known kickboxer from France. And he came out, and I trained in Thailand for 2 months with it. So my checking of kicks was on point. He came out, he threw a heavy one, blocked it straight away. Never threw another one the entire fight because it fucking hurts. But with the calf kick, here's another reason you don't really see it. Because when you're fighting, you're looking at your opponent. You're looking at them maybe in the eyes. It's a little weird if you look at them in the eye the whole time. Maybe it's the chin or the chest. And the reason being is then you can see most of it, right? But here's when people have the hands low, when they're fighting and they get confident, they have the hands low and they're pimping the motherfuckers and they're like, come on, dickhead, let's go. Because they're confident, they got the timing. But it also makes the punches harder to see. Because when your hands are here in front of your face and then I'm punching out straight like that, of course you can see it. If they're down here, it's a little harder to see because you know, the eye level is about chest height. When you're throwing a calf kick, again, even harder to see because it's not coming up high. You're focusing on your opponent's chest area or facial area. You're taking in all this other stuff. You're not seeing a little calf coming nice and low. You know what I mean? And then, of course, if you've got longer legs, if you're taller, then you don't have to get into the pocket to land the calf kicks. It's a very, very, very effective tool. And I'm excited to see the evolution and how people find the way to counter them because it's coming. It's coming. I mean, the main thing you can do is just get out of the way. You just got to have the quick enough legs to lift over it or push back, step away. Because if you push your leg out to check it, they're still going to connect with the calf. There's still going to be a little bit. You might hurt them a little bit with your, because you don't want to check with your tibia. Right? Sorry, is it tibia and fibia down here at the bottom? Look at those legs, baby boy. But down here, it's thin. Up here, it's hard. Look at that scar, man.
Well, you're not wearing pants.
This is where, well, it's fucking 80 degrees here today. It's boiling. It's very, very hot here. So I was just sunbathing a little bit. No, but at the top, this is thick. The knee, that's hard as fuck. Down at the bottom, it's thin. So you don't want to check fucking kicks there anyway. You know what I'm saying? And it's got to chop you up big time.
So what would you do? How would you check it? What would just the defenses move out of the way?
Knock the fucker out.
Yeah, punch him, right? The best defense is a good offense, the age-old saying.
But that is generally, though. Either push away, step out of the way, lift your leg up and step over it. Hard to do, though. You need great reflexes. Or every time they throw a kick, boom, a right hand straight down the middle. I mean, that's a good counter for any kind of back leg kick. So, they are a cruel, vicious, punishing tool. I mean, I don't want to take them. Jimmy Rivera's leg was so swollen and so bruised and so black. I'm telling you, he's going to be limping around for about a month.
Well, you can see that even during the fight, you can see that his leg was really swollen. And then after fight, when they were announcing the winner, you really saw it. Both their legs actually looked kind of beat up, to be honest. So, yeah, that's just like, it's one of these things where it's like, I was watching it with my chick, actually, and she was like, does that even hurt, like leg kicks? Because it doesn't, if you've never taken a leg kick, it doesn't even look like it hurts.
It fucking hurts. It hurts a lot. Anyway, so there you go. Calf kicks. Fucking pain in the ass. Fortunately, they weren't around in my day. That's all I'm going to say. I did Steve-O's podcast this morning, like you said, and he was asking me. I was like, no, did not exist. I do want to talk about this. Paulo Costa was in the news. Harrington, show yourself. Point number two, Paulo Costa explains what did him in the first round with Israel Adesanya and gave his reasoning as to why he would dominate a rematch. So I'm going to allow you to explain, but this just smells like sour grapes or excuses, malusis, whatever you want to call it. But go ahead, please.
Ironically, he was drinking sour grapes.
Ironically, he was.
Yeah, all right. Exactly that. Paulo Costa says that, you know, he needed a sleep aid. He was on Fight Island. He got in there. His sleep was all messed up. He'd been awake for over 24 hours. He just needed to get some sleep. Started with a glass of wine, ended up, at a half bottle, then a full bottle. In the quote here, he says that he was still a little drunk when he got into the cage there. I had a very different sensation. I don't think I told you about this, Tamara. I enter every fight very active, of course. I'm afraid of getting hit or knocked out, so I'm always paying close attention. For this fight, for the title, I was sleepy and not even a little worried about getting hit. I didn't feel anything. It was very strange. I had no hype in thinking I was going for the title. I was totally serene. I was so calm that it scared me. The loss happened, but if I had lost him being 100% healthy, then I would have lost. Then I would have been a lot more upset because someone would have defeated me for real. But since my loss happened under the circumstances, I missed Warrior. I'm going to fight Adesanya again. Fight him the right way.
I lost my title fight. Listen, you fucking lost. You got beat. You didn't show up. You didn't try and fight. You took a sleep aid. Yeah, you looked half asleep. He looked half asleep in that fight because he didn't do fuck all. Saying he was drunk in the octagon still, don't buy that. Why don't I buy that? Well, because they're in fucking Abu Dhabi and they're doing it on California time. So he didn't walk into the octagon until fucking 6 o'clock in the morning the day after. So unless he was getting pissed that day without going to sleep, that's highly unlikely. A bottle of wine? Fucking, I'll do two bottles of wine. I'll be drunk, but I'll still be okay the next day. Harrington, what?
Well, devil's advocate, I have... before when I was a drinker, I have gotten so drunk the night before that I tried to sleep it off. I woke up the next day still pretty hammered, having to go to my job as a Little League umpire.
Are you trying to tell me there is a phenomenon that exists that when you drink so much you can still be tipsy in the morning? Are you explaining that to me? I have no idea.
It's Michael Bisping's entire career.
42 years on this planet, I've woke up fucking rather tipsy, and it was always like this. How do you feel this morning? Well, I shouldn't have driven to work this morning, that's for sure. do you know what I mean? It's a classic. You go out, you have a heavy night, but you're still going to do a Saturday morning shift at the factory. It's like, oh fuck, I'm fucking hammered here. And a lot of people, they do get pulled for that, and you know, I'm ashamed to say that maybe I've got behind the wheel before the night after a sleep. Listen, that does happen. I don't think a bottle of wine is enough to have that, and as I say, with the time difference, I do have a little bit of an issue believing that story.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's true or not true, a bottle of wine is not enough to be absolutely drunk or really affect you. Maybe a little bit of a headache the next day, a little bit of hungover, but not being full drunk. I remember one time I got drunk when I was like, the first time I got hammered, I was like 16, 17 years old. And we just drank, I mean, maybe a dozen drinks, like vodka sodas. I was just chugging them. And I was drunk for a full 24 hours. I woke up the next day and I was still straight up drunk. But it was so many drinks. And I was such a young kid. I wasn't used to drinking. One bottle of wine for a guy as big as Paulo Costa. You know, also the way he dresses, you assume that this guy knows how to drink.
The weight cut probably affected how much water he had in his body, though.
The weight cut would affect your ability to hold the alcohol. But listen, I've been here. I know this phenomenon. I've indulged with a couple of drinks the night before a fight.
You have been intoxicated?
I have been intoxicated before, and I have been intoxicated the night before a fight. You know what I'm saying? Not that I'm proud of that, you know. For Paulo Costa, I've got to wonder how much of the pressure was a factor for him doing that. Do you know what I'm saying? It was the pressure getting to him a little bit. And in terms of, yeah, a bottle of wine, listen, it is enough. If you drink a bottle of wine and you don't drink enough, all jokes aside, that would be enough the next day to impact your performance in a negative way, okay?
Right, especially at that level where you have extremely high-level athletes that are, you know, going up against Israel Adesanya, who has, you know, the reflexes of a cat. He's everyone's number one pound-for-pound guy right now. Without a doubt, you don't want to lose any edge. I'm just saying that this also might be something that Paulo Costa needs to do in order to get himself mentally, giving himself that excuse. Maybe he can, that's just sort of what gets him motivated, where he's going, you know what, I wasn't 100%. And if he needs to tell himself that, then fine. I'm not hating on it, but he should just keep it to himself. He shouldn't tell the media that. He should tell himself that.
Yeah, no. I think there's been a couple of excuses now, hasn't there, Harrington? I think there has been. I think this isn't the first excuse from Costa that we've had. There was something else at the time. The reality is he didn't show up in that fight, and he's trying to excuse it, and he's trying to come up with things and sleep aids and this and dick pills and bottles of wine and fucking silk shirts. And Harrington, what have you got? Oh, nothing. Okay. Don't make that face like you're about to say something. You were going to go. You were like,
I'm sorry. I'm pulling up an article. I didn't even know I was on camera. I'm sorry.
Oh, my bad. My bad. Sorry, buddy. Yeah. No, listen, at the end of the day, he got beat and it was a bad loss. So he's pissed off, you know, and maybe he did have some wine as well, you know, but I as a human being, we do that, you know, and it's only natural as human beings, you know, you don't want to accept that you got your ass kicked. You don't want to accept that the guy is better. It's like, we were talking about this last week about Dominic Cruz when he lost to Henry Cejudo. You know, he came, you know, he blamed Keith Peterson and it was an early stoppage and the referee smelled of cigarettes and alcohol. And I get it. And now we've got Paulo Costa saying, well, I drank red wine the night before. Well, because what are the alternatives? The alternatives are admitting and saying to the world, I, as a professional fighter on my best form, went out there and got my ass kicked royally. You know what I mean? And that, it, you know, that's not good for him to accept that. His ego won't allow him to accept that. Maybe that is what happened, but I suspect it wasn't. And I understand, because as fighters, you're going to have ultimate confidence. So you're going to almost convince yourself that, no. I would beat him. If everything was perfect, I'd destroy that guy. But not on this occasion, it wasn't for this reason.
And I think in any time you lose at anything, not even just in the fight game, in anything in the world, you can sort of go through the beats of what happened and figure out what you should have done differently. Everybody can step back. Hindsight is 20/20. So yeah, he probably shouldn't have drank the night before. It's not that I don't believe him that he didn't have a few drinks. I don't think he's lying about that. I think that he's convincing himself that that's the excuse. And he probably even believes it.
100%. I'm sure he does believe it. I'm sure that he did have... you know, a little bit of wine. Maybe he had a full fucking bottle. Who knows? Who cares? Two glasses is half a bottle of wine, right? When I used to weigh in for my fights, we'd all get together, all the team, all my friends and family that have flown in, all my team and anyone else we knew that were in the area. Sometimes it'd be 30 people, which I had to pick up the fucking check for every time. They were very expensive dinners. But still, at those dinners, I would always have myself a shandy, which is a beer mixed with Sprite, lemonade, you know, half that. A good shandy on a hot day is fucking delightful. It's a lot of sugar, it's a lot of carbs. So I was like, oh, it's carbs, baby boy. I'm refueling.
But it's energy.
It's energy. I'm just fucking, this is fucking premium unleaded. What are you talking about?
It's healthy. It's actually a healthy choice right now. You need the carbs to burn for energy. You're going to put, you know, burn that at an optimal, you know, amount, and you're going to perform at your highest capacity.
Exactly. So listen, you know, he's just trying to fight. He's, excuses. I said it before. Excuses, malooses. Fans, your neck in nooses. What do you want, Harrington?
So I did look it up. He was blaming it on an undisclosed injury that he had suffered in training for the fight. He also did mention...
he had a broken pussy.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, after...
it's a good one, though. I like it.
Thanks.
A bit disrespectful for the warriors, the samurais that suffer and sacrifice their own bodies for our entertainment. You know, that level, a little bit disrespectful, but a good one.
He was disrespecting the audience by getting drunk on a bottle of wine the night before. I paid for that fight.
So was Jairzinho, Ronald Shug, and Cyril Gane, but you sucked their dick before.
Well, I sucked Cyril Gane's dick, that fucking big fat French cock.
Yeah. Who wants to fucking suck a loser's dick?
If I gotta choose one, I'm sucking Cyril Gane's dick. Let's get real.
Hey. Anyway, whatever. He might let you. He's French. Anyway, go on. Before I get fired from the UFC for that one. Jesus Christ.
So he did mention the injury. He did mention the lack of sleep. He also said immediately in the post-fight presser after that he talked to his camp. He knew exactly what the problem was, and he wouldn't let it happen again. So that does lead me to believe that maybe he knew, hey, I got a little too drunk last night. The whole no sleeping thing, happened to fly to Abu Dhabi for this fight. You know, there was a lot of factors in Costa where this does line up.
Listen, it doesn't matter. I'm sorry to cut you off there, Harrington, but the reason being, and I know you were just going to further bolster his point, right? But at the end of the day, we as human beings, we're all in control of our own bodies, right? And nobody put a gun to his head and said to drink that wine. And if he's now blaming the loss on the fact that he drank wine, well, then that is his fault. In his preparation, he didn't do everything he needed to do to win the fight, and that is nobody else's fault but his own. And it sounds like I'm being harsh. I'm not. That's the reality of the situation. You know, as I said before, as fighters, we We don't want to accept our shortcomings because it can be detrimental to our confidence going forward. But also, you got to be realistic. You can't just be in denial. You have to accept what went wrong. You have to be man enough to look yourself in the mirror, to look at the fight, watch it, break it down with your coaches and say, well, fuck, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I engage more? Why didn't I try and counter here? Why was my output so low? There are the questions that I should be asking, not putting things out there in the media saying I drank red wine. The reality is, the sport has moved on from that fight. That was back in when? August, September or something? It's moved on. Adesanya's fighting Blachowicz next month. Don't embarrass yourself further by making excuses. Say, you know what? I got beat by the champ, but guess what? I'm going nowhere. I'm going to win two more fights. I'm going to beat Robert Whittaker, and I'm going to get to do this again. I made mistakes last time, but when I get a rematch, I won't fuck up then.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, it's just a psychological thing. And if it helps him get through it and it helps him in his mental preparation for Robert Whittaker, and he goes, you know what, I'm going to be perfect this time. I know the mistakes I made last time. It's only a good thing, whatever, you know, more power to him. If that's, you know, we watch fucking Jan. He carries a piece of rope around that he puts around his wrist now because it's good luck. That's all just mumbo jumbo horse shit. It's not real. Good luck doesn't exist. Magic isn't real. But if it convinces him that that is an edge, and if he puts that around his wrist and he trains with it, and he head,
whoa,
believes in magic now.
No. I don't not believe in magic. I'm not so foolhardy. But Lewis, are you not the one on the first Monday of every month or whatever? You start the day by going rabbit, like rabbit, a total rabbit. Fucking loser.
You should have seen when I told his family, but all of his kids were so into Rabbit. You should have seen how angry it made him. He was like, if somebody says fucking
Rabbit,
Rabbit.
The point I'm making is that you're talking shit and you're contradicting yourself. You're like, I don't do none of that. You do that Rabbit, buddy.
I didn't say that I didn't do it. I said that magic doesn't really exist. But if you have a lucky hat and you believe that lucky hat brings you luck, you are going to perform at a different level. It's just psychological. It's a mental thing.
The placebo effect.
Yes. So that ultimately is what I break it down. So I think there's a mental psychological benefit for him to sort of get himself psyched up and to come up with those excuses. I don't look at them as excuses. I look at it as just sort of mental preparation. So I'm not hating on it, but let's just get real.
I'm not hating on it either, but there's a fine balance. You know, you do need that to a certain degree. But also, as I said before, you got to be realistic. You got to look, because if he's going to fight, let's just say he was fighting Adesanya again, and he just sticks to his guns and said, no, it was the sleep aid, it was the wine, it was all that. Me, strategically, nothing to change. I was perfect. The same thing's going to happen. What he needs to do is, anytime you lose, you have to sit down, you got to be honest with yourself and think, right, why did I lose and what can I do to prevent that from happening again? Of course, drinking red wine the night before would be an obvious one. But changing your strategy would also be another one, because standing there in the middle of the octagon and calling him on and being all cocky, but then not actually throwing anything and eating lots of calf kicks and leg kicks and all the rest of it, that is not how you win that fight. But still, we're not here to shit on Paulo Costa. I think he's a tremendous fighter and he's very, very exciting. And I can't wait for his fight with Robert Whittaker, which is going to be an absolutely sensational one. We've seen a lot of boxers and MMA guys going to boxing and YouTubers boxing and all the rest of it. Well, we have, who was it? I know it's Frank Mir that I'm talking about. What's the main
Antonio Tarver.
No,
the main
event is
Ben Askren versus Jake Paul.
Oh, yeah. So we've got Jake Paul versus Ben Askren. Okay, that's a big fight that people are talking about. And I can't believe I just said that sentence. But still, on the undercard of that is Frank Mir taking on Antonio Tarver, which is a boxer, a world championship boxer in Tarver, a guy that has a knockout victory over Roy Jones Jr., I would say around about the time of his prime, taking on Frank Mir, who's a jiu-jitsu specialist who has very, very heavy hands, but was more known for his grappling in the UFC.
And even when he was getting knockouts, it was like knees and like kickboxing. It wasn't like he had these crazy like punches where he was knocking people out. I think he had the knockout over Krokop with a knee to the head.
A boring fight as well, but then he caught him near the end with that knee. No, listen, Frank's great. He's a legend of the sport. He really is. And he's been around it forever and ever and ever. Tremendous grappler, heavy hands, great fighter. Nothing but respect for him. But I don't like this matchup. I don't like it at all. I don't like the Jake Paul versus Ben Askren matchup. What's happening here? Fighters MMA fighters, UFC fighters that have a big name are being brought over to these mock boxing events as sacrificial lambs to, for them to say, hey, look how good we are. We're destroying all the UFC talent or MMA talent. So the MMA talent are fighting good boxers. All right, Jake Paul, not in that list. But fucking Antonio Tarver, I mean, if you bring up his record, Brian, I mean, the guy is a tremendously ferocious fighter, lots of experience, been in there with some of the best in the world, multiple-time world champion, I think. I think he went to the Olympics as well. I think he might have got a silver or a bronze at the Olympics. The man's a beast. He's top of the food chain, and he's not that old. So you got to think that has to favor Antonio Tarver. I'd like, let's fucking see Antonio come over to the UFC and what's going to happen there. I mean, that led real quick.
Yeah, 31-6 is his record, and his most recent professional boxing match was August 14th, 2015, a draw with Steve Cunningham. I mean, look, I love Frank. I'm a really big Frank Mir fan. When I first got into mixed martial arts as like a hardcore fan, Frank Mir was one of the guys on top. This is, you know, right after Arlovsky and Tim Sylvia sort of, they had their back and forth. Frank Mir came in and he won the title, I think, from Tim Sylvia, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. So Frank's great. Okay. And, you know, I think he's a good dude as well. Every interview I've seen him in, he's a good dude. He's a family man. His kids do martial arts. But I think that this is a tough fight, but I don't think Frank Mir, I heard his comment. I saw him on social media talking about it. He was like, I'm going to test myself. And that's also probably not a good sign when somebody's saying, I want to test myself.
No, listen, test myself. He's going to get paid. That's what he's going to get. He's going to get paid, and good for him, because I don't know if he's still fighting anymore. Did he retire? I know he's with Bellator now, but still, whatever. He's going to get a good paycheck.
Free agent, actually. So
free agent.
He fought his last fight in Bellator against Roy Nelson, won the fight, and then they decided not to re-up his contract. He looked like he was going to go to BKFC, and then this popped up.
Got it. Hey, listen, I'm always happy. You know, guys after the UFC, I like to see them making money. Good for Ben Askren. You know, I still think that favors probably Jake Paul, that fight, because the wrestling can't be you. Yeah, of course, for Ben, he's got the high-level experience. He's got the competitive nature and all the rest of it, but it's boxing. Antonio Tarver will probably, unless Frank catches him with something, you know, he's not as good as a boxer as Antonio Tarver. That's just it, plain and simple. Yeah. Now, there's many different factors that can get you a victory. You might fight harder. You might be more aggressive. You might be in better shape and just throw nonstop. Who knows what those are? But Antonio Tarver was a world-class boxer. Frank Mir was a world-class fighter that relied heavily on Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And listen, I'm happy for Frank. I'm happy for Antonio. I hope they all make a shit ton of money. But how about they pick somebody from fucking the UFC that has good hands? Do you know what I mean? At least Conor was a striker when he fought Floyd Mayweather. Right. But unfortunately, he's going against a guy that was 49-0, one of the best to ever do it. Let's bring, you know what I mean, Adesanya against someone who's a good boxer. Do you know what I mean? Or a Blachowicz against a good boxer. Somebody that likes to use their hands. You know what I mean? Not somebody that likes to grapple. What the fuck?
The downside of that is we would still probably watch most mixed martial artists, even at the highest level, lose against most professional boxers. It's just, it's a different sport. It is very, very different. And just like we'd watch most boxers lose, and this is an old, you know, the age old thing. I mean, we watching James Toney get his ass kicked by Randy Couture was one of the most enjoyable things that I've ever seen in my entire life. It was just so fun. And I remember right after Randy Couture beat, what's his name? I just said it. Jesus Christ. There, my brain fart. Right after Randy Couture beat James Toney, James Toney was like, all right, well, now how about you come over to boxing? And do you remember what Randy said?
What'd he say?
He's like, hell no, he'll kill me.
Yeah. Just well, no, listen, and that's very honest and decent of Randy to say that. And he's right, that would have happened, you know. But I'm not against it. I'm happy they're all making money, but they're just cherry picking. They're cherry picking stylistic matchups. You know what I'm saying?
Do you inherently root for the mixed martial artists in those matchups? Like, you're rooting for Frank Mir, you're rooting for Ben Askren, or no, you just... You don't really have a horse in the race.
No, I mean, listen, I always wish my brothers in arms the best, shall we say, but not necessarily. I mean, it depends on the storyline going into a fight. It depends how people are acting going into a fight. It depends on my personal relationship with that person, if I have one. You know what I mean? There's many factors. So at this moment in time, I'll be rooting for Frank. I wish him all the best. And as I say, I mean, as you said as well, you know, the guy's got heavy hands. He's got knockout power. He could probably do it, but he won't. you know.
I think he's a lot bigger than Antonio Tarver. Antonio Tarver is 6'2". I don't know how much he weighs, but Frank Mir, true heavyweight, cut down to 265 for Frank's a lot of massive. His fights. Yeah, Frank's a huge guy. So that's a factor as well that we may not be considering, the size difference. I'm rooting hard for any mixed martial artist against any boxer. I'm rooting hard for Ben Askren.
No, me too. Me too, yeah. For the most part, as I say, you know, unless they're a total dickhead. Yeah. And there's a few of them around. Looking at these notes, what else should we get into? We've got a lot of questions today. Thank you very much for sending them in. bympod@gmail.com if you've got any more. All right, today's episode is brought to you by Sheath Underwear. You know the deal. Sheath made the most comfortable boxer briefs that I have ever worn. And if you took the plunge and try them, you will see what I am talking about. If you are sick of boxers that are too loose or briefs that are too tight, Sheath is for you. And here's what makes Sheath unique. It is the stretch sheath fabric is made out of moisture wicking technology. I don't have too much moisture down there, I'll be honest. But if you are a moisture guy, you have a sweat problem, guess what? These will wick it. They are moisture wicking technology, Lewis.
I am very moist down in my ball region all the time. I'll tell you
moisture
right now.
Moisture wicking?
It's not
moisture
good.
Wicking.
I got to wick my moisture right now, and Sheath enables me to do that. What I love about Sheath, though, is the dual pocket technology. Ugh, okay.
Don't get me started.
I love it. You can sheath. The reason they call it sheath, it's a little bit of a, if you understand it, you sheath your penis in the hole. So you sheath it, you unsheath it. When you got to go pee, unsheath. When you're done peeing, put it back in the hole. It's a dual pouch technology. You put your frankenbeens right in one place. It keeps it all in a nice tight little package. It looks and feels incredible.
Yeah, and listen, if you don't want to buy Sheath underwear, have a foreskin. That's what I have. I have a built-in sheath. It's fine. It works wonders. But still, Americans are crazy, and a lot of people still need the extra layer of sheath protection. And that's why the founder of Sheath, he was working out in Afghanistan, serving, in Afghanistan. Very, very hot there. So he just clocked in for a 9-to-5 shift on the old war zone there. And we're not talking Call of Duty. Listen, at the end of the day, you're all going to have to buy new underwear. Support our show. Please support Sheath. They're a fantastic company. The designs are fantastic. They are super comfortable, as we said. And we got a pretty good goddamn deal. All you got to do is go to sheathunderwear.com. Sheath, S-H-E-A-T-H. Sheathunderwear.com and use the code BELIEVE20. You'll get 20% off your order. One more time. Sheathunderwear.com. Use the code BELIEVE20. Separate the Frank and the beans. Excite your wife, your boyfriend, whoever it is, with the moisture wicking, licking, dicking. Let's get back into it. What do you want to go about? I was going to say Max Holloway, but we talked about the people sparring less more and more these days. We've talked about that quite a lot recently. So well,
there's not much of a conversation. Yeah, there's not much of a conversation there, but we should mention this is sort of news right now. Masvidal, he did an interview, sort of an off-the-cuff interview, and he announced that his next fight is going to be against Kamaru Usman.
Yeah, which is... It's not really news as such. It's news maybe that it's definitely being booked, but we knew it was trending in that direction. I think even Dana said they were working on that. So, I mean, that's good. That's good for Masvidal. Gets another shot. It's very good for Usman. You know, I wonder if that rematch will be bigger than the original one. I don't think it will. They did 1.3 million pay-per-view buys. I hope it is. I hope it is for the company. I hope it is for Masvidal and for Usman and everybody involved, I do. But I just think that was the perfect storm last time. Masvidal taking it on short notice. That injecting excitement. It was the first pay-per-view after a while because of the pandemic. It was Fight Island. There was a ton of hype about Fight Island at the time. Everyone was like, whoa, you know. Remember how excited people were about Fight Island when it first got announced? So there was a lot of things going in its favor.
It was the only sport that was available. There was no professional sports at all, no competitive sports, no live events. Nothing. Yeah. So it was the one thing to watch. But on the other hand, it is a rematch. Rematches typically sell better than the original fight. And they have a full however many months to promote the fight and to build a fight card around that fight specifically. I don't remember who was on the undercard for the first fight, but that was a short notice fight. Who fell out of the fight originally?
I don't know.
If I'm not mistaken, it was Gilbert Burns, no?
No, was it Tyron Woodley? No, it wasn't Tyron Woodley. No, fuck not. I don't know. That's a good question, Lewis. I don't know why I don't recall that. Mm. But listen, either way, it's going to be, listen, Masvidal's excited. He really is. And he did a good job in that first fight of stopping the takedowns. He got tired as the fight went along, but people generally do get tired as fights wear along. When you get to doing five rounds in an MMA fight is tiring, right? He was able to do that and he was able to fight back. But I don't think he's going to come in that much better shape, you know? So I mean, early prediction would be you got to lean towards Usman because he's looked so bloody good lately. He's looked sensational. His striking is getting better every time we see him. But Masvidal's super exciting, and he's got that power, you know, to turn people's lights out. So, yeah, man, that's great. Very, very excited for it.
It was Gilbert Burns. He pulled out on July 3rd, and then Masvidal agreed they had the fight done in less than a week on July 11th. The interesting thing there, Masvidal said that the fight will not be happening until sometime in either late August, early September. My question for you guys, are they going to then, like, does that give them enough time to build a season of the Ultimate Fighter around them? And if they do, will that build up the hype to beat that 1.3 million pay-per-view buy number?
Well, Go on, Lewis.
I'm sorry. I say, is that rumored to be targeting an Ultimate Fighter season?
Oh, yeah.
It is. Okay. That'd be good.
What? When, Harrington? You disappeared. When?
So the fight itself, Masvidal's quote was, they were asking him about boxing Canelo, and he's like, I'm not worried about, you know, he gave the response that you have to give as a fighter, which I think was a pretty unfair question to ask Masvidal in that role. He was there as a commentator. He said, I'm more focused on, you know, my fight training. I have a belt to, I'm going after in, he said, August. No, wait, I think it's September. So because they're giving him until late summer, early fall, I'm asking, like, you know, is that enough time to film the Ultimate Fighter over the spring/summer and then give them that time to prepare for a championship
fight? Well, yeah. Yeah, of course it is. September's near the end of the bloody year, Harrington. That's 6 months away. Six or seven. We're only at the end of February or the first day of March. You know what I'm saying? So he's got 6 or 7 months there. So, yeah, it is. I don't know if they're going to do The Ultimate Fighter. I would like to see that. I think Masvidal and him on there arguing will bring a lot of heat. Obviously, if you get a supportive cast and they bring some changes to the format, that would be awesome. But go ahead, Harrington.
Well, did you see Usman's actually like starting to play the trolling game a little bit?
No, I saw you put something in the notes about that. Go on. What did he do? Is there something that he did, a dancing or something?
So Usman, you know, he posted, he said, I'm back in training already, getting ready for my next fight. He kind of hinted at the Masvidal fight being the game too. It was 13 days after he beat Gilbert Burns, and you just see him in the cage, moving around, throwing the jab, and then foot stomp.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I saw that. Yeah, he's just messing about, having a bit of fun. No, sorry. That's what you're referring to. I saw that he was just like drilling the foot stomps. You know what I mean? Okay, whatever. You know, I quickly scrolled past it. If I'm honest, I'm like, all right, that's cute. It's funny. It got a little smile, corner of my mouth, a little smile. Oh yeah, that's cool. That's it. But yeah, great fight. What else do we have on here?
Well, real quick before we move on, I kind of want to just, you know, say real quick, Kamaru, I feel like he's in an interesting position right now where he is, you know, a lot of MMA insiders think he's, you know, the best of the best, think he might be number one pound for pound. But I think the Ultimate Fighter might be an opportunity to showcase his personality, because I feel like I don't really know Kamaru's personality from what I've seen so far. I don't know if it's because
we had him on the show. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying we've had him on the show. I still can't put my finger on how I would describe Kamaru's personality.
He's a very, very nice guy. He is. He's not the big, you know, he's a smart guy. He's a nice guy. He trains hard. He's very polite. He's very respectful. He's a good person. You know, the person that I know, and granted, I don't know him that well, but all my interactions with him, they've all been very, very positive. But he's not the type of guy that's going to make a fool out of himself on The Ultimate Fighter. He may engage with Masvidal, of course, because when you're going to fight, tempers flare, and then you start to talk a bit of shit. You know, you get upset, you get carried away. But he's not that type of guy that's going to, you know, because sometimes when you're doing things like that, you gotta be willing to make a fool of yourself a little bit. You know what I mean? Mm. I got offered a reality TV show recently and I turned it down because I'm like, nah, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to be that performing monkey. I'm 42 years old. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be making a fool out of myself and doing these scripted bloody scenarios. You know what I'm
saying?
Trying
to create moments.
Drama where there isn't one there and, oh my God, or whatever the scenario it is. You know, so I said no. And I don't think Usman will be the type to do that. However, there is real tension and real friction between him and Masvidal. And that would be enough to give some good drama. And then, of course, the show's actually about all the people on the team as well. You know what I'm saying? So you get a good cast, it'd still be a great coach, even though he's not the type that's going to go out there and talk shit and be making a fool out of himself and playing pranks and all the rest of it. It could still be a really good choice for a coach, though, nonetheless.
Kamaru should choose a really exciting, experienced assistant coach that maybe has done The Ultimate Fighter twice.
Yeah. He was the ultimate. He was a coach on Jason Miller's team. When we did that back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So you coached against him.
And look at that. Look at that. Follow your dreams, ladies and gentlemen, because there was Kush, we called him. Kush, that was his name. Everyone called him Kush. And I'd always walk past him like, shut the fuck up, Kush, because he never said much. You know what I mean? You know, like, it's so annoying. I do it to loads of people when they don't talk. It's a very childish joke, but I did. I said, shut the fuck up, Kush, because he wouldn't talk. And he'd look at me like he wanted to kill me. And now he's the champion of the world. Look at that. You know what I mean? So well done to
him.
God bless.
Some would say that you motivated him to become champion.
Some would say that he owes me 20% of his purse. You know.
Not a big deal. Not a big deal. Let him keep it.
There you have it. I don't need it. Okay. So what else did we want to discuss? There was one more thing. Masvidal, Costa, we've done that.
Before we move on, I got to say, if you love the show, go subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, really anywhere where you can get podcasts, you can find the Believe in Me podcast. We have a YouTube channel as well, which is just exploding. Love the YouTube channel. Great comments always. Please leave us a comment and subscribe there. Hit the notification button. You get a notification every time a brand new episode is dropping. Typically, the episodes drop on Mondays and Thursdays, right around midnight Eastern. So if you guys are looking out for them, you guys can watch them live. And very often, myself and Mr. Bisping join the live chat. So yeah, look out for us as well. And if you guys want access to the complete on-demand library, every episode we've ever done, you can get them all in one place, ad-free and uncensored. All at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use that promo code BYM. You get a 14-day free trial. You get access to everything all in one place. And yeah, if you want to join the conversation, we love the questions, video questions,
obviously,
audio questions.
Depends what time zone you're in. You know, midnight New York is that works if you're in New York. If you're in England, that's 8 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And we could go on all day, 9 o'clock in Paris.
I mean, to be fair, I did say Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, no, sure. If you're in New York, Eastern.
Actually, I don't think it's Eastern Standard. What does EST stand for?
Eastern Standard Time would be my guess.
I may not be. I think it's something weird.
All right. Well, GMT is Greenwich Mean Time
I thought that was General Mountain Time up until maybe 6 months ago.
Are you serious?
I had no idea.
Greenwich Mean Time, okay, because it's the center of the universe, London, baby. Okay, listen, we've got a massive pay-per-view, 3 huge title fights. Megan Anderson taking on Amanda Nunes. We've got Aljamain Sterling finally getting a shot against Piotr Jan and Israel Adesanya and Jan Blachowicz. By the way, did you get a chance to see that countdown show, Lewis?
No, I have not yet.
Oh my God. It's unreal. It was on ABC Saturday morning. I'm in my hotel room just doing a last minute research for the fights on Saturday that we just had. And ABC just happened to be on when the countdown show came on. I mean, that just shows again. I mean, obviously it's all part of the Disney umbrella, but the countdown shows being on fucking ABC is unreal. And the countdown show that they did for Adesanya versus Blachowicz, I didn't see the whole thing. I just saw their segment. Unbelievable. I mean, the production, oh my God, it's insane. It made me want to be a fighter again so bad.
Why?
Because Adesanya obviously he's Nigerian, but he lives in New Zealand. And New Zealand is a utterly beautiful country, just like so naturally beautiful. The cliffs and the oceans and the rolling greenery and the countryside, it's just fantastic. And they had Adesanya and his whole team down at the ocean in the river, and they had some guy that was like doing these drills with them where they had to run into the waves, hold the water as long as possible, and then they're running up the sand dunes, and just the scenery was absolutely it was epic. It was like something from a movie, you know what I mean? It just looked fucking sensational. And they had Adesanya and all his team behind him, they're running up the sand dunes and shit, and then the guys there like a marine commando into the water, and they're running into the waves and stuff and swimming. Now I guarantee they never do any of that shit in training. They got there and the countdown show guys like, hey, so we're just thinking, there's this guy that runs these training operations down by the beach. It'd be fucking sensitive. It's a 4-hour drive, but it'll be worth it. No, I don't know. Maybe they do, but maybe it was staged. But either way, I'm glad it was, because it was awesome. And then you cut to Poland and you've got Blachowicz. He's running through the snow. He's jumping into a natural fucking frozen lake with, you know, for an ice bath.
Yeah.
He's jumping in there and he's in the ice. Just happy as Larry, chatting away in a fucking natural ice bath with a beanie hat on and gloves. Got to keep your extremities nice and warm. Mm. But yeah, man, it was just so well done. The production value on it is insane. If you get a chance, go and check that out.
I will. Yeah, the countdown shows have always been really good. I used to watch every single countdown show and get really hyped up. I always thought that the UFC was very ahead of the curve with sort of how they did those production packages. Everything from like the music they would choose, they'd have like cool shots, be like the rims of the car kind of going down the street, and then they would pan out and it's a fighter and he's talking. Very, very cool. Very motivating as well.
And I saw also Adesanya bought his mother a Porsche Cayenne, which is a nice Porsche SUV. So God bless him now. Obviously doing very, very well. So good to see. All right. BYMPod@gmail.com. Send in your questions if you have them. Apparently, we have quite a few that Brian has been letting build up. So we're going to do some of them. We're going to answer some of them. So Brian Harrington, Brian, over to you. What have you got?
All right, so this question we got is from Darren's dad, bunch of numbers. He says, Bisbing, what's the funniest thing an opponent has ever said to you during a fight? And Lewis, what's the funniest line a heckler has ever hit you with?
Oh.
You got yours? I kind of got, it's not through a fight, but you go on. You go first.
I mean, it's not even funny. It was just hurtful. I remember when I first started in comedy, I was doing what they would be called urban rooms, which is essentially, you know, they were rooms in like Black and Hispanic neighborhoods. You do a lot of them. And Black and Hispanic audiences are some of the best audiences in the world when it's going well. Like Black and Hispanic people like to laugh. They like to have a good time. It's just sort of like it's you remember in high school, it's like, you know,
because the white people don't. The white people, they don't like to laugh. They don't like to have a good time.
They're a little more uptight. I got to be honest with you. White people, as a comedy audience.
It's a large brushstroke, but go ahead.
Look, I do professional comedy. This is what I do. I perform in front of many audiences.
You're also Hispanic. So maybe you're looking at it from a different lens. I know I like to laugh, and I know lots of white people that also like to laugh. I know brown people, black people, Indian people. I think people like to laugh.
You grew up as hot garbage, though. So you're honorarily Puerto Rican, okay? So the white people, just in general, they have a layer of white guilt. They have they feel a little bit more... Yeah, you can't say nope. I'm a comedian. I'm telling you, I've been doing comedy 15 years. Black and Hispanic audiences are easier to make laugh than all white audiences.
Maybe they just don't get your humor. Maybe you're just not that funny. Maybe you bombed on that night. I'm just throwing it out. They were shit. I was awesome, but the crowd was shit. You know what you sound like now? You sound like Paulo Costa. Did you have wine that night, Lewis? Did you have a sleep aid that night? Come on, dude.
Ask any comedian, they will tell you that you go up in front of an audience full of Black and Hispanic people. They're not uptight. They're not getting offended by anything. It's just a different mentality. If you go in front of an all white audience, you're like, oh, this is going to be a set where you have to be a little bit more careful. You know, they're a little bit more like, oh, should I be laughing at this? Regardless, I was doing a show very early in my career. Now, if it's going well, if you're good, if you're bad,
answer the question before you slag off any more races.
If you're bad at comedy, well, then white people will just politely stare at you and they'll be like, okay, that was fine. Whatever. Next guy. If you bomb in front of a Black or Hispanic crowd, they're going to let you know it. And I was so young in comedy. It was maybe my fifth time performing. And we were at this little like bar and it was all Black people in the crowd. And it was like a raucous crowd. And I was terrified. And I just went up there with this fake confidence and they could just smell it. They could tell that I was not really confident. Whatever I was doing, my first joke bombed so badly. And this woman in the front row, she just started screaming next at the top of her lungs to the point. Later, she wouldn't stop just screaming next over and over and over
again. That's not funny.
It wasn't funny for me. It was funny for the whole audience. They all laughed at me until I walked off stage. And
sounds like a drunk, obnoxious bitch. Next. Yeah. Uh-huh. Next. Hilarious. Original bitch. Get the fuck out. I'd have her thrown out, kicked out, banned, never to be seen again.
That, you know, who that woman was?
Go on.
Karen Bryant.
Was she really?
No. Oh. How funny would that be, though?
It would have been fucking hilarious. But number one, not all white people are the same. So there you go. Not all white people have the same sense of humor. If you come and do comedy up my way, where I'm from, and you're shit, you think they're all going to sit there politely and go, he's trying his best. We got to be respectful. No, you'll have a meat pie thrown in your fucking face pretty quick and probably get beat up as you walk back to your car. Never really had anyone talk to me in the fights, really. I was never one for that. I've had a few things here and there. But when I squared up with Chael Sonnen, I've said this before, you know, you square up and you're trying to be mean and intimidating. And I square up and we're on the stage. We had the weigh-in. I forget which UFC it was. UFC on Fox 2. Phil Davis versus Rashad Evans main event. Me and Chael Sonnen co-main event. And we're squaring up. We're on the stage in front of thousands of people. And I'm like trying to look tough and hard. And he just goes, you smell really nice. What is that cologne you are wearing? And I couldn't help but laugh. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, you fucking asshole. I'm trying to be tough, trying to be hard, that whole bit. And he's like, you smell delightful. What is that cologne you are wearing? Anyway, there you go. Or Charles McCarthy, Chainsaw Charles McCarthy, when he said, he screamed him out. He literally screamed, I'm going to break your fucking neck. No. I'm going to break your fucking arm. I'm going to break your fucking arm. And the reason that was funny is because I broke his arm by kneeing him in the forearm so often and so hard that I broke his arm. So kind of ironic. But yeah, there you go. There you go. Next question.
Well, I was going to say, because you're talking about some of these fighters, who did you like? Out of everyone you fought, who did you like the most going into the fight? Like, where you're like, you had no ill will. You're like, I actually really like this guy.
Dan Miller. Yeah, Jason Miller's brother, Dan Miller. He was just a solid guy, nice guy. And I bumped into him a few times.
Not like, Jason Miller's brother. You're thinking of...
Jim Miller. What am I saying? Miller, yeah. Jason Miller. Pardon me. Thank you. Good catch. Yeah, Jim Miller's brother, Dan Miller. I bumped into him a few times here and there. And we're like, oh, hey, what's up, buddy? How are you? You know, a little handshake. Just nice and cordial. Just a nice, normal guy from New Jersey. No fucking bullshit. No ego. No shit talk. So, yeah, he was great. Yeah, good guy.
And did that make it harder to go in there and motivate to fight him?
No, not in the slightest. Just like a game of football or a game of whatever. You're trying to win. You're trying to win. You're a competitive guy. You're trying to win, you know? And if you lose, it's going to hurt. So you always try your best.
All right, let's just take a quick moment and thank Hemp Fusion for supporting today's show. Now, everyone is always talking about how important it is to get a good night rest. And I'll tell you right now, it is hard. If you're working, if you're traveling, Mr. Bisping, back and forth from Vegas to California, all over the world, Abu Dhabi, who knows? How do you possibly get sleep, Bisping? Hemp Fusion is the answer.
Well, of course, and I do drink a lot of caffeine as well throughout the day, which is a nightmare. You know, it really is. And sometimes I'm still tapping my feet away like crazy in bed. Hemp Fusion, the sleep aid, is absolutely fantastic. And of course, they've got a variety of CBD products and wellness products as well. If you go to the website, hempfusion.com, they've got CBD infused with ashwagandha. I like that one. That helps your stress. There's one for energy. There's one for sleep, as we said, which is excellent. It does get you off to sleep nicely. You don't feel groggy in the morning. You have good quality sleep as well. And of course, if you go to the website, there's all kinds of wellness products as well. There's all kinds of creams, aging creams, eczema creams, you name it, they've got it. There's a Saturday night at the UFC, in fact, I just had neck surgery, but my neck was killing it. It was like the other side of my neck. And I was really having a bad time. And then I remembered, holy shit, I've got some of their Hemp Fusion pain relief cream in my bag. So I pulled it out. I applied it right then and there. Did a cheeky little picture as well. Stuck it on Instagram. I got a little bit of shit for that one. But no, the pain disappeared. It really, really does work.
And yeah, I'll tell you right now, I stopped smoking weed a little while ago and my anxiety is always through the roof. I take CBD every morning and every night. When I wake up to start the day, I take some CBD. And then right before I go to bed, it completely calms me down, takes out all the anxiety. CBD can help with so many different things. Do some independent research and see how CBD can help you with any of your affliction. And if you're going to get CBD, get it from hempfusion.com.
And if you want a good night's sleep, then you need the sleep support or any of Hemp Fusion's premium CBD products that they're offering to all of our listeners with a 25% discount when you use the promo code COUNT at checkout. Once again, hempfusion.com. The code is COUNT. 25% off your purchase of high quality CBD oil products from Hemp Fusion. Okay, where were we? Brian, next question, please.
All right, so we got this one from Wayne Taylor. He asks, Dustin Poirier walks around about 195. Why does he fight at 155 and not 185? Why does he cut so much weight?
Well, everybody knows the answer to that question if you follow it close enough. I don't think he probably gets as high as 195. Maybe on occasion, you know, or maybe once in his life he did get as high as 195. So he says that, oh, I come down from 195. When he's in shape, obviously, I doubt he's weighing 195 when he's in shape. Man, he's not going to fight when he's out of shape. So you got that straight away. And people generally cut weight, you know, and he doesn't seem small for 155. He seems about the same size as everybody else at 155. So it probably is the right weight class. And everybody knows in mixed martial arts, people cut weight. I hope the culture changes. It needs to change. We'll have better fights. We'll have less injuries. And we won't have fights canceling because people didn't make weight. We won't have people at the start of the second round absolutely gassed and exhausted because that's unprofessional. So people should all move up a weight class, but it's going to be a long time before that happens.
Yeah. I mean, if he can make the weight and it's not, you know, he's not having trouble, why wouldn't you fight at the weight class that you can make and be effective at? He's also, I mean, he's on top of the world right now, 155. Why isn't he fighting at 185? Because I think he'd have some trouble with Israel Adesanya.
And I'm retired with one eye. Do you know what I mean? I hate to see what Paulo Costa would do to me if he didn't have any wine. You know what I mean? Paulo Costa with no wine will fuck up Dustin. I'm just saying. No,
dude, Paulo Costa with no wine is number one pound for pound fighter in the world.
No wine, Paulo Costa. My God. What was it? It's a motivated Connor. No wine, Paulo Costa. There's a few others like that they say in the mixed martial arts community. So that's a good one. No, what was I going to say? I was going to say a good point there about Dustin. Ah, whatever. Who cares? Oh, no, that's what I was going to. He used to fight at 145. Let's remember when he first fought Connor, that was at 145 pounds. You know, so mate, if you can make 145, of course, he's not going to fight at 185. However, Kenny Florian started at 185 on The Ultimate Fighter, went to 170, 55, ended up staying at 45. So, but yeah, there you go. That is the answer to your question, my friend. But thank you very much for writing in. Brian.
All right. This is the last written question. Then we got some videos in. Sam Fisher asks, do you have any advice for a pool player? He drills, focuses on fundamentals and practices endurance, among other things. It's very rigid and structured. And these are things he learned from doing MMA. He was like, do you have any other practices that you believe would transcend into different sports? Little or big things, something someone might forget to pay attention to, like a stable life at home, or knowing when to take a rest.
Yeah, well, listen, you're playing pool. You don't need to worry about overtraining, okay? You know, I mean, you might go to the pub to do your training, get shit-faced.
Do not drink wine.
Just don't drink wine. Lager. Stick to lager. Maybe a little gin and tonic, a little G&T. You know, you might get a pool cue over your head, but still. Practice a lot. That's what you want to do. Discipline, you know, I mean, to be honest, it's all the same things in anything, really. A lot of the same stuff carries over. You know, I mean, I'm sure being a comedian, same thing. It's all, you know, you start at the bottom, you got to work your way up. How do you do that? Well, it is hard work. And, you know, what quantifies that hard work is different in everything. You know, for MMA, it's going out there and, you know, training and doing your boxing, your wrestling and all the rest of it and working your way up. For comedy, starting at the bottom and working on your jokes and sitting there and make sure you're doing your writing and practicing your set, all that type of stuff. And for a pool player, I don't know, it probably involves fucking smoking cigarettes and having a few beers at the pub. To each their own. I know which one I'd fucking choose. I'm getting into pool, Lewis. Simple as that.
Are you good at pool?
Used to be okay. When I used to go to the pubs a lot, I used to be okay. You know, but I played it recently, somewhat recently, and I sucked. I haven't done it in a long time. It's definitely something you forget how to play.
We played in Big Bear.
Yeah.
I remember, yeah, not good. Nobody was good in that house. It was embarrassing.
It was the longest game of pool ever. I tell you what I used to like. When I used to play pool with the lads in Clitheroe, we used to play Killer. You ever play Killer?
No.
Yeah, so what's he called? Robinson. What's the big guy from The Office? Does a lot of movies. Black guy, big curly. Craig Robinson.
Yeah, Craig.
Yeah, so I was hanging out with him after one of his shows, and there was a pool table. So everyone's playing pool, and I'll get next. So I go over, I say, let's have a game of Killer. And he's like, what's Killer? And so what you do is everyone that's there, so there's 20 people, everyone put, 20 is a lot. Let's say 7. Or 10, who knows? Limitless, let's be honest. But everybody puts in an amount of money that you agree. Back in the day, we'd always put a pound in. So all the lads, we'd chuck a pound in. So it'd be like 20 quid in the pot. And then you get one shot each. You get two lives, and you get every shot, you've got a pot of ball. It doesn't matter what color ball, blue, black, red, whatever. As long as a ball goes down, but not the white ball. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
This thing doesn't see color.
I don't see color. But if you put the ball, then you find it goes to the next person. But if you don't put a ball, obviously you lose a life. And when you lose both lives, you're out. And then at the end, and it's fun though. It's fun. It's a good fun drinking
last
game.
Man with the last man standing keeps all the money.
Last man standing gets 20 quid. Do you know what I mean? And then you play like it again. It's fun. It's a fun game. Check it out. There you go. Brian, video question time, I believe.
Yeah. All right. So we have this one here from Eric Ether.
Eric. Swedish. I believe it's a whale's vagina.
All right, look. You say you want more video questions. I sent you a video question, which I thought was pretty good, from my shower, no less. I was still dripping with shower water. It's very sexy, very sexy, very sensual. And he didn't play it. Maybe the quality was bad. I thought the question was good. So I'll ask it again. Michael Bisping, you always say you can't give picks when you're commentating a card. I just want to know why. You understand the game very well. I mean, it's an unbiased opinion. You just pick who you think is going to win. I don't see what the problem is. And Lewis, in reference to Jason Ellis, we both know he kind of he's bisexual, pansexual. He just fucks whatever as a whole. I want to know if you had to pick, would you want to fuck Jason Ellis or be fucked by Jason Ellis?
It's a good question.
Question. I know. Why choose, right?
When you can have both. Who's will take it?
I like this guy.
I like this guy a lot. I do. I kind of want to see the video of him naked in the shower. What happened to that, Brian? Come on.
I'll have to go back and find it. Maybe the quality wasn't so good.
So let's start with you, Lewis. I'm Jason Ellis. I'm coming in. All right, mate, how you doing? I've got tats all over my head, right? And I think I can fight, but I can't really fucking fight. I talk about it on the radio, and I do this sham of a show called Jason fucking Ellis, right? Now, at the end of the day, Lewis, I'm going to fuck you, right? Do you want me to fuck you up the arse, or do you want to fuck me up my arse? It's up to you, mate. So, you know, which one, Lewis?
I mean, it's either choosing to fuck or be fucked, obviously. I mean, I think this is pretty obvious. I'm going to do the fucking. Not that I want to, but I mean, if I have to choose one, you know, I can close my eyes.
So what you're saying is, if push came to shove, you would do the pushing. And you'd probably enjoy it. You know,
I'd do some shoving too.
It's a sensation that you like, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, it's a
butt. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but you would like to be the man in a relationship with Jason Ellis. Just say that sentence.
I'm going to be the top. That's all I know. It's warm. It's soft. I close my eyes. I pretend it's Michael Bisping.
You will have, listen, if push came to shove, you would have sex with Jason Ellis. Okay. Hey, listen.
Hey, who knows how this fight's going to go? Maybe he's going to kick my ass so bad that I have to have sex with Jason Ellis at the end of it.
I mean, that's not something I want to think about.
All right, Bisping, very close-minded. Very close-minded. Wow. I thought you were open-minded.
No,
I thought you didn't see color anymore. I didn't think you had any problems.
You got to fight. Let's keep it professional. You know, I can't be thinking about that. And to answer the guy's question, same thing. It's about being professional. Of course, you can't pick who's going to win, right? Because you're commentating the fight, so you can't have any investment in it. Of course, anytime you make a pick, you might have money on that, right? Mm-hmm. So that might changes things, and you might have an emotional want. You know, you go out publicly and say this guy's going to win. You kind of want that to happen. It's just a little bit unprofessional. I'm there to call the fights. Call the fights as I see it. I shouldn't have my something in the race. I shouldn't have any
a horse in the race.
Horse, yeah. I shouldn't have any horse in the race. It's like no, it's unprofessional. It is.
Does that come from the UFC or is it your own sort of, you said, I'm not going to make a pick, I'm commentating, or did they tell you, hey, don't publicly pick anybody if you're commentating?
No, they've never told me to never publicly pick because I'm commentating, but there has been occasion where I've done the desk or whatever like that, and I've been commentating, and they said, no, you're commentating, you don't have to make a pick. But if you're not commentating, then you have to make a pick, you know? Okay. So I just let that cross over into my everyday life. Obviously, you know, the UFC don't want the commentators making picks, so it doesn't take a fucking rocket scientist to know that if I'm doing a podcast, I should follow that same protocol.
And when you're in that moment, you know, to add on to it, you are an employee of the UFC. It would be weird. It's like you're part of this production team. You're not, the UFC as a whole isn't supposed to be putting their support
agendas
behind
forward.
Yeah, they shouldn't be putting their support behind one of these guys. It should be equal support. This is what this guy does good. This is what this guy does good. You know,
correct.
Completely objective. And I think that, you know, you're sort of not representing yourself in that moment. You're representing the UFC. And if I'm a fighter and then I know this guy at the fucking desk picked against me, that might fuck with my head a little bit.
Yeah. Well, at the desk, again, that's kind of fair play. But yeah, the commentator at the desk has been publicly going out there saying that he thinks I'm going to lose because of reason X, Y, Z. I mean, that's another thing as well. Generally, when you make a prediction, you got to back it up and say why you made that prediction. So if you know, go into detail, breaking something down about how this fucking guy is going to lose this fight, why he's going to lose this fight, their opponent might see that and then implement that game plan or whatever. There's many, many reasons. But as you said, the best thing is you are a representation of the UFC. So therefore you got to be completely impartial and just there to do the job and call the fights as you see it, not have any kind of emotional investment on who wins, you know? And I prefer it that way big time. Because then you got to talk to them afterwards as well. I don't want them coming up and going, "Hey, Bisping, I saw that little prediction that you did. Dickhead, how'd that work out for you?" You know, because then you're going to have those kind of situations as well. You know what I'm saying?
Right, of course.
Yeah, yeah. What else, Brian?
All right, we got two more. I got this question here from Kiki.
Do you love me?
Hey, Lewis, Mike, Harrington, and Brian. I have a question for each of you. Bisping, was there a time where you wanted to hang up your gloves sooner than you already did? And Lewis, was there ever a time where you wanted to give up comedy and try something else? Big fan of the show, guys. Just listen to you at the gym. Keep up the great work. Let's get that subscriber number up.
Hell yeah.
Who's this lady? What's her name?
Kiki.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Well done. She must have heard that so many fucking times. Thank you for the very, very well laid out question. Very good question. Very good there. Thank you, Kiki. What was the question?
She said, was there a time before you retired that you maybe considered retiring?
No, never, which is wild. Because I remember, like, now and again, I see something on TV, like one of my fights pop up, Fight Pass online, whatever. And I look and I see and I'm going, "Oh, I'm going to be the fucking champion one day, blah, blah, blah." And I know I've only got one eye in that scenario. And I'm like, wow, that guy's out of his mind. You know what I mean? That guy's out of his mind. He has one eye and he's just managed to scrape another fucking win. And he's going, "Ah, come on, line him up. I'll knock him down." I'm like, this fucking guy's crazy. No, I never wanted to retire. I wanted to continue fighting as well. But, you know, ultimately I was forced out of it because of my eyes. If it wasn't because of my eyes, I'd probably still be fighting now. And I'm glad I'm not, you know, I don't miss those training camps. I was talking about this to Rebecca the other night. She said to me, she said, "Do you think if you were still fighting, no injuries and you could still do it, do you think you'd still just have the energy to do it?" And I'm like, probably not, because it's fucking hard work. Getting out of bed early, going for your run, sticking to the diet, going to all the different practices and whatnot, training 3 times a day and doing interviews and press conferences. I like a nice, quiet life these days. Do you know what I mean? So the answer is no, probably not. But to answer your question, Kiki, and thank you. No, I did not. Lewis, comedy?
Yeah, I mean, comedy is all peaks and valleys. So the valleys, especially in the very beginning, you question it all the time. You know, before you have any success, before there's any money, when you're just doing it for the love of it, you're like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, there's no clear path even to making a career or making money. I was never the guy that was getting a ton of industry support or television support. I've done a bunch of TV shows and I've done some things that you're supposed to do, but my success came after I did all of those things and it didn't really pan out. The Tonight shows and the sitcoms and all that route never panned out. So I started doing things on my own. There's a point in comedy where, you know, you're like, you don't know if you can make it until you're 10 years in. You got to put a decade in before you know if this is even an option to really make it. That's really minimum. 10 years is around the time before you start really making some cash. And at that point, every friend of yours is a comedian. Your whole life, all you think about is performing. You sort of give up all of these other aspects of your life. And at one point you realize, oh shit, I'm not doing anything with my career. And you have to go backwards. So once I sort of crossed the threshold where I was making a living, then it was just, you know, keep on making progress. But very early in my career, all the time, and some of the best advice, the best piece of advice I ever got from another comedian was a guy named Joey Gay. And I was bummed out one day. I was outside of a comedy club.
Good name for a comedian.
Great name for a comedian. I was outside of a comedy club and I was just bummed out. Like, it was one of these, you know, nothing's going on. What am I doing here? You know, maybe I probably bombed that night, whatever it was. And I was like, I don't even know.
What audience?
But all white people just fucking sitting there, barely laughing. And he it was just a great little piece of advice that I think really makes sense for anybody who's trying to go for their passion, which he was like, dude, no matter what, just keep showing up. Anytime you feel like you want to quit, you don't want to do it, just get up on stage, do a set, you know, and that have that be your go-to. And that always sort of stuck with me. Just keep showing up. And eventually the valleys started becoming higher and higher. And eventually the valleys were higher than my peaks when I was a young comic. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm having a bad day now or a bad week now, I'm still in a substantially better position than I was a decade ago. So yeah, that doubt creeps in all the time. And I think you need that doubt in order to make you good at any of these things.
Yeah, and to be honest, I can kind of expand on the question a little bit. If I was talking about the acting side of things, because it's kind of the fighting is different because I had a solid contract with the UFC. I was earning good money and I was always able to fight. So of course, I'm at that time giving up or quitting never really occurred to me. I was like, I'm going to run the fucking rails off this until I can't do it anymore because I get paid handsomely and fortunate. I'm in a fortunate position, but acting is a very different thing. You know what I mean? I don't have, you know, I'm not what's the word I'm looking for? Pardon me?
Talented?
Yeah, there's that. That's definitely an obstacle. No, but I'm not established in that world, right? So, you know, right. You go for all these auditions and stuff and you work your ass off and you go for meetings. You know, my agent, in normal times, I was going up to LA and Hollywood and driving off to Santa Monica and meeting producers and doing this and doing that. And, you know, just spending a lot of time sitting in the car in traffic, going to meetings and a lot of time, just a total waste of time. And then there becomes long periods of time where you're not booking any work, you know? And you think, oh God, should I just fucking stop doing this? Should I just give this up? What am I doing, you know? But then you get booked for something, you know what I mean? Like last year I was thinking that and then something good came up. I was like, oh shit, and then it reignites that passion. And I remember, not that I'm trying to one-up your Joey Gay story, but when I was at Gold's Gym, Arnold Schwarzenegger came up and basically said the same thing what he said. You know, he said, oh, because his nephew is, or like stepson or whatever, I forget what the exact relationship is my lawyer. So he kind of, you know, he's aware of me that way as well. And he came up and he said, listen, Michael, in the acting world,
listen to me. Okay, there's going to be a long period of time. You're not going to get the role.
No, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'll be back. No, and he just said, there's always going to be times like that. He said, I was like that. He said, I remember I booked, Hercules Comes to New York. And I thought I was going to be set. And I thought that was it. Pardon me?
Great movie.
Great movie if it's opposite day. And and he said, yeah, I thought I was going to be set after that. He said, and it was like a couple of years before I got anything, you know, and then I got Conan and everything changed. But I was like, yeah, it's great advice. You know what I mean? If you enjoy it and you're passionate about it, keep doing it, I say, you know. Yeah, there you go. Anyway.
Michael Bisping, get down.
Get down.
Everybody can do the get down, but they can't do anything else than this. It is not a tumor.
Everyone's got their like, little Arnie bits.
How great was, did you ever watch his, the documentary Pumping Iron?
Yes. Yeah. Every day is like, you're coming, you know?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it all. Actually. I started watching it on Netflix one day. I think I've seen the first half of it, but yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah. Dean Lister does a good, Arnold Schwarzenegger. If anyone's interested. All right. Well, I think that's our show. 4 PM yeah. There. Been going for a couple of hours.
We got one more.
Ryan, I'm so sorry. I hate to cut you off. I have to be out the door right now. I'm sorry. I really don't have time for one more. Put a button
save
on
that, Brian. Save it for Thursday's show. We're going to be back. We're going to break down all the big fights that are happening this weekend. We've got Darren Till joining us next Monday. Tell your friends about the show. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all the questions, positive feedback, everything. We truly appreciate you. We'll see you on Thursday.